everyone. Whoops, that was loud. Sorry. We're going to go ahead and start. So if you can kind of hold it down in the back, that would be great. My name is Danielle Jones, and I'm program director for Mass Poetry, a nonprofit organization that works to get poetry off the page and into the world, from residencies in public schools and museums to Poetry on the Tee, Mass Poetry Festival, and Evening of Inspired Leaders. And we're so thrilled to be collaborating with the Boston Book Festival to bring you a full day of poetry programming today, in person, in community. And can we all just take a moment and really feel that we are in person and in community again? It feels really good, doesn't it? And I can't think of a better reason to be together than for the next two poets that we're going to hear, who are amazing poets and people, Michael Ansara and Andrea Cohen. The first reader will be Michael Ansara. Michael Ansara spent many years as an activist and an organizer. He's the co-founder and a board member of Mass Poetry, which I can tell you has become a home for a lot of poets like me. He serves on the executive committee of the Redress Movement and the organizing team for Together We Elect. He lives in Carlisle, Massachusetts with his wife, Barbara Arnold, and dotes on his six grandchildren, Cyrus, Ben, Tessa, Treat, Seamus, and Owen. His work has appeared in Vox, Solstice, Cognoscenti, Aerosmith, and elsewhere. He's working on a memoir. Michael Ansara.
Thank you, Danielle, and thank all of you for being here. It's an incredible honor for me to read with Andrea. She is just an amazingly wise, talented, and brilliant poet, and I was saying to her, I almost feel like an imposter being up here on the stage with her. So it's wonderful to do that. So I'm going to read from my very first book, first book at 75. It took a long time, but better late than never. And 15 years ago, I was handed a sonogram of my very first grandchild, Cyrus. Stunning to believe that he's now 15 and 6'3". But I was just gripped by the sonogram. I assume many of you have seen sonograms, so you'll know. At 19 weeks, each chinked link in the precise formed fishbone backbone, each particular within a swirled cosmos of black grain and flecked white, delineating a pear curve in a coned basket, a scrap of continuation, marker of the long march away from the dorsal. Already prehensile hand, fingers that lightly flutter, larger than likely head, skull unfleshed, as if to remind us of what remains in the end. Now, the impossible beauty of possibility taking shape faster than the future. The inevitable gates and alleys, foot flex, blood bloom, even grief. Yellowstone in winter. For my friend Kim Clare. The flies of Yellowstone in winter live unseasonably, hovering within inches of water. Heat breaks through, heat alive within the mineral speck, a life chain that climbs hot and frothy up finally to flies, persistent, precarious. An unexpected gust can send anyone soaring toward the sun too high. I was in the white cold of Yellowstone watching flies when you slung that rough rope over the rafter in a bare Montana cabin when you chose to tilt that chair. On the death in Alaska of Marie Smith Jones, the last speaker of EAC. Water is never lost. It falls, flows, blows, mists, again to fall, now as rain, now as snow. the liquid of language can come to nothing. Words, sound, song strung along the taut tendon of 10,000 years vanish as if windblown over winter, flecks of ice running over the crusted roof of the Copper River. Speechless light lets go. Gone the tongue. Gone caribou beyond counting. Ptarmigan and fox, white against the white, years of pestilence and pox. Gone the feel of fat against the top of the tongue. Something a little less serious, but still serious. The contest. My son sprints all unpracticed nonchalance to match my stride at the lake's warmed edge. Silent against the coming of cooling dark, standing together as if to pray, we pee. Mine falls short, yellowed, diminishing, with a rustling hiss, vanishing into the sponge, decay of bark, soft rust of pine. The last veins of bronze light outline the profound arc of sparkling piss as he starts to sway, widening as he swivels side to side with unrestrained enduring force, eyes delight, tossing his wolf-thick hair, his delicately boned chest, bare to the low sun of summer's end. Fathers and sons, aging fathers and sons. So think back, if you would, to the summer of 2017. Just think how you felt at the end of that summer. End of summer 2017. In this summer and fall of our disquiet, the peach trees cracked under the burden of their bounty. The apple trees seemed blissful in their fruitfulness. Hummingbirds floated in the garden, their throat gorgets gorgeous, changing color in the summer light like the shimmer of oil thinning on water. Our grandchildren each seemed to grow another inch. Everywhere was a lush excess. On the manure pile, volunteer pumpkins, dozens of giant orange orbs among green vines and two large leaves. The deer emerged at dawn, stepping out of their dense woods for a banquet, tough teeth chewing the plentiful seeds' firm flesh. And each morning, we awoke among all this and were dismayed. Race is just a story. In the alley or lewd casino, every game its dealer, every story its teller, in caves, in cotton fields, on playing fields, while plowing fields, in ice storms, dust storms, monsoons, typhoons. Fictions, the shape of your head, the meaning of your lips, the curl, the color, the kink, the length, the sun, the cold, the light, the dark. Race is just a story. But because of it, the shackle, the whip, the brand, the noose, the bullet, endless songs of mourning rising like soft smoke in the evening sky. Race is just a story. Every story its teller. Every salt tear tastes the same. True story, George Washington's teeth. A little different than what we were raised as at least school children to believe. George Washington's teeth, ivory, pulled from the pink, unblemished, white from black, sold, bought, not stolen, 9 teeth, 122 shillings. The familiar, never smiling mouth, thin, grim, always aware of destiny, choosing not to be king, hiding a disconsolate mandible, desolate, reborn with the false, not wooden. All men are created equal. Some are forced to sell their teeth, see children on the block. This is the story of our birth, so much extracted. Red clay turned over, black hands on the plow, 9 teeth for a white mouth, 122 shillings, 1/3 the going rate. How am I doing on time?
You're doing great.
Okay. Okay. So I'm going to share my one really long poem. Usually I write very short poems, but this is what I refer to as my kitchen sink poem. I put everything in it, and I wasn't sure it works, and I'm still not sure it does, but maybe. I will say I did take one bit of poetic license in this poem. There's a set of quotes from a slave named Jeffrey. Those are real quotes. They were recorded by Mortimer Thompson, who'd been sent to Savannah by the abolitionist paper New York Tribune to report on the sale of over 400 slaves from the Butler plantations in March of 1859. And I, however, have moved the location. The sale had to be at the West Savannah Fairground because it was so many slaves. And I've moved it to the very real ongoing slave market in downtown. So to finish, here's Savannah, the kitchen sink poem. Heading south out of seas of snow along the highways, everywhere hawks hang in the sky. Outside the South Carolina border, one perfect formation, slowly rotating mobile, each bird fixed in relation to the other, hunger hunting, vectoring on southern heat. Savannah, a surprise, lush, civilized, 22 squares, a colonial design of a city. We walk by a marker for President Washington's letter to the congregation Kahal Kadesh Mikveh Israel. Sephardic Jews, exhausted by deception, tired of pretending to pray with a cross, fled here, lived here, prayed here, welcomed here, owned slaves here. We walk in soft rain. Too many old friends have died this year. They seem to be, and then blinkingly, they are not. As we walk, I think, passed over? Why do I think passed over instead of ended? My life, no arc unbroken, small moments, a mosaic life, a Chagall, not Greek or Roman, my mother's people from the shuttle. We walk from square to square, down Bull Street to the U.S. Customs House, grand and out of time now. Down Drayton Street, by Bay Lane. Here were the pens. Here were the open-air markets. Here, a young Jeffrey was sold and begged. Please buy Dorcas. I love her well and true. She says she loves me, and I know she does. The good Lord knows I loves her better than I loves anyone in this wide world. Never can love another woman half so well. Please buy Dorcas, Master. Dorcas, prime woman, A1 woman, tall gal, sir, long arms, strong, healthy, and can do a heap of work in a day. First-rate bargain at that. No plaque for that. I hate people who cannot pass the test of their own history. I think of Sherman's march to the sea. No fires hot enough to finally burn away the salt ash of this legacy. We walk, we eat at Allure, served by a tall woman, charmed by a tall woman. Her long arm, a secret code of tats. She should have been an actress. She should have been a model. She should have sung in a rock and roll band. She must be a writer, waiter. She talks us through dinner. She talks me into more wine. She talks us into bourbon pie. She shares her name, talks me into trance. Why did my generation feel so free to be held heedless with their children and their names? Montana, Wildflower, Moonbeam, Blossom, Chakra, Willow, Moonshine, Monterey. Names matter. We become what we are called to be. Impulse, indelible, writing more powerful than any ink needle. I am increasingly uncomfortable within this worn carapace of age. Now I worry that my silent eyes shout, might even be seen to be begging someone younger than both my two daughters, take me home, take me to your bed, take me, make me other, make me young again, fool me into being. I blink, wide-eyed, hawk or hare, and look across the table at you, your knowing, slight, indulgent smile. You have known me so very long, known my faithful foolery, my many felonies, never of the flesh. Time after time, I cannot believe you have stuck with me. No nullification, no secession. If I were to say any of that aloud, now or ever, you are ready to shush me into silence. The slack tide turns, rising, rushing up rivers, creeks, capillaries. Slivers of moon throb in my throat. The years are sculpting your face. Once wide cheeks now carved away, a new elegance of age. I cast a sly look at each etched line, each worthy wrinkle, each evolving familiarity. For 10,000 mornings now, I have woken up to them. Here in Savannah, I feel the soft moldering of history, contorted as the Harry Lauder's walking stick we planted in the back garden, now sleeping under 6 feet of snow, so twisted, so beautiful. Thank you so much.
That was absolutely wonderful. Thank you. I'm just going to use it like this because I'm only going to be here for a second. Introducing Andrea Cohen, the author of 7 collections of poetry, including most recently, Everything. A new collection, The Sorrow Apartments, is forthcoming from Fourway. Cohen's poems have appeared in The New Yorker a few times, Poetry, The Threepenny Review, The Atlantic Monthly, The New Republic, and elsewhere. Her awards include a Guggenheim Fellowship and several residencies at McDowell. She directs the Blacksmith House Poetry Series in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and is teaching at Boston University in the fall of 2022. She's also my dear, dear friend. Welcome, Andrea Cohen.
Those are beautiful poems, Michael. Thank you so much for those. Thank you, Danielle, dear friend, and some dear friends in the audience, and thank you all for being here. What do I want to do? I've been practicing a little tap dance, but I'm not going to do that. This is called Wrecking Ball. Its offices are thin air. On days off, it still goes in. Wrecking balls are workaholics. They hang around up there, and even the idea of big sky crumbles. Everything. Everything was beautiful and nothing hurt, Kurt Vonnegut said. Everything was beautiful and nothing hurt, the girl slurred to the artist at the tattoo parlor. The word made flesh isn't fictional. It's beautiful. It hurts. How's the sound? It's okay. The lighting is okay. The hair, do we have a makeup person? No? Okay. This is called After. After the accident, we had the phrase, after the accident. Also this, before the accident. We had a drawer marked before and after. And after and before happenings, we'd add atrocities and incidents. And the wild asters someone before and after keeps leaving. This is called Shiva. Evenings we sit in the living room together. Friday, I take my mother's slot noon at the beauty salon. Ruth, who for 40 years washed her hair, washes mine. We're all in the desert together. Your mother liked the water cold, Ruth says. News to me. From 1,000 mouths, our dead assemble. That's a true story. They're all true in some way. Let's see.
We have a set list.
What?
We have a set list.
Oh, I do. The greatest hits, you know. I get hit after each one, yeah. This is called, what's it called? It's called Seaside. Before the day at the beach, we scouted out the day at the beach. Because nothing happens without planning. Because we had to plant the sand and the idea of happiness. We had to haul in the water. All our pleasures were forays into wilds. We're carry in and out, like our bodies, which glistened and were gone. And the story I always tell, one story, is, because it's true about that poem, is that many years ago, probably in the late 80s, I rented a house in Provincetown with some other people, including someone else named Andrea Cohen. And she's an attorney now. And she was very small, and her girlfriend, Carol, was very tall. And the day before July 4th, they were going to go for a picnic on the 4th, but the day before, they just kind of went to the beach to scout it out. And it's something I would have never done, but, you know, it was useful for a poem. So, yeah. I'm going to read a few newer poems. This is called Something. Something went wrong. That's what the machine says when I call to say my paper didn't arrive. Machines are trained by people, so they're smart. They know a thing or 50 trillion. Did you miss your Sunday delivery, it asks. I did, I say. I miss everything I say because it's a machine and it has to listen, or at least it has to not hang up without trying to understand why I called, which means trying to correct what went wrong. Let me see if I got this right, the voice says. You missed your Sunday paper. Yes, I say, but also I miss my childhood and fairy tales like Eden. I miss sweet Rob Roy's with strangers. I miss fabric softener. I miss soft lighting. I'm sorry, the machine says. I'm having trouble understanding. Did you miss today's paper? Yes, I say, but that's not the half of it. Sometimes I just feel like half of me, and even that feels like too much. I'm having trouble understanding, the machine repeats, its syllables halted as if trying to mimic an empath. I'm having trouble understanding too, I say. I used to understand so much, photosynthesis, the human heart. I'd even memorize the Krebs cycle, but now all I remember is lifting the golden coil of the kitchen phone to maneuver under my mother's conversations. It was like lifting the horizon. There's a silence, and the machine asks, "Are you still there?" In a few words, please describe your issue. Where do I begin being a minimalist? Time, I say. I've got a problem with that. Also, loss and attachment. That's pretty much it. And the news in its sky blue sleeve is meant to be a distraction, isn't it? I ask. More silence, and then, "You miss your mother," a voice asks. It's a human voice. "Me too," she says. Thank you. That's an epic for me. Very long. I have to go to my swooning couch now. This is called Heaven. It's hell for the girls who loved bad boys. That's it. Clover. Clover. She hovered above her life like a bee who'd forgotten what flowers are for. Ghosting. How cavalier people are with language and with silence. Any ghost will tell you the last thing we mean to do is leave you. Purchase. John Bronzina, I think you could save me. You have green eyes and have completed your training for CPR for children and adults. John, I am in the latter category, and though my breathing is fine now, things change rapidly. You know this because you have a card for emergency roadside service. John, it is expired. You have a dental appointment in 6 days. Don't miss it. You have credit cards and debit cards, and what you do at the Lemming Emporium is your business. But I wonder, what were you doing when you lost that wallet? When I found it, I'd stopped my car on Ocean View to look at a house being built on stilts. It's behind a fence that says, "Keep out." There's a pile of beer cans there, and I wonder if you had something to do with that. Maybe you sat back under the scrub pines getting drunk with friends or on your own. Maybe you were imagining you lived there, that you'd gotten locked out and were waiting for your wife or your boyfriend or both of them to let you in. That's what life is, John. People opening. You know this. You live in Connecticut. You know the president and CEO of the Invisible Bridge Corporation. His card is in your wallet. Maybe you applied for a job there. Maybe you got it. I had a job once at Toll Booths of America, but they let me go. Or more accurately, I preferred the short-term pain of leaving to the long-term injury of staying in one place. What are your goals, John Bronzina? Do you think about how you'll feel when you get where you're headed? I never think about a place until I've left it. Things take time, John. You'll come to understand that. You have a birthday coming up. You'll be 25. In your driver's license, you're trying to smile. You're an organ donor. Parts of you may one day spill into others, the way your wallet tumbled from you, the way your cards and badges and cash flew into the bazaar of salt air and seagrasses where there's nothing to buy or sell, just another trespasser in soft sand struggling for what we sometimes, where I come from, call purchase. And so when this young man came to pick up his wallet the next day, I had thought maybe I'd read him the poem because I'd gone through his wallet and I'd written a draft of the poem. And then he showed up and he had written, he was about 25, as you know, and he'd written out a thank you on a piece of legal paper and it said, "Have an awesome summer." And I thought, yeah, I'm not gonna do that. Yeah. So how am I doing on time, Danielle?
You're doing great.
Okay. This is called Alcatraz. How quickly one gets from A to Z. How swiftly one says everything there is to see. These bars, for instance, and the flexible fencing of sharks. And how impossibly far it is, this life, from that. So I was in San Francisco this summer, and I like to swim, and it's impossible to not look at Alcatraz in San Francisco and think, really? People actually do it, I think, sometimes, but I think sharks do it more. This is called Matinee. Today, the part of love will be played by regret. Memory will be played by what if. Tragedy by the saxophonist. Silence will be played by silence. There will be no intermission. Keepsake. She gave me nothing. Nothing lasts. So when I used to work with Danielle, we used to get to read each other poems in the morning. So this is for Danielle. This is from yesterday. This is called Elephant. We ought to do more than talk about her. We ought to say to the elephant how sorry we are. We ought to ask her what kind of grasses she'd like and whether she has a suitcase to pack. We ought to tell her about the compass we found, how we're prepared to carry her suitcase and a bright lantern. We ought to listen when she says, please, be quiet. I read two more poems. Bunker. What would I think coming up after my world had evaporated? I'd wish I were water. And this is a poem for my dad. I think it's the most recent version. It's called Roosevelt Dargon. Roosevelt Dargon, how often I've thought of you and your leg. We were driving that last stretch of slow road home in snow and ice in the blue Vista Cruiser. What was I, five, when your big rig crashed? We didn't see it happen, but got there right after, before the ambulance and cops, before the snarl of cars that would have kept us from reaching you. I say us, but what I mean is my father, who told my brothers and me, stay here, while my mother toggled between Static and Tommy Dorsey, and he ran to the jackknifed cab and found you pinned in there, left leg mostly severed, but tethered enough under the crushed front dash to keep several bigger men from pulling you out. There was a lot of blood you were losing, and the tumbled lumber and concrete blocks from the load you'd been hauling, and the smashed glass of cling peaches and syrup from the truck you'd swerved into, and all around you, fuel was pooling, collecting, threatening to catch fire. And I have to imagine what you would have heard, my father's voice, calm and measured, saying, I'm a doctor. He might not have said, a psychiatrist. What he showed you was his Swiss Army knife. What he did was ask permission to finish what the accident had started, to cut the tendon freely, to cut the tendon cleanly to free you. I guess we never know which part of ourselves we'll have to sacrifice or when we might need to say to a stranger with a pocket knife, I'd be obliged. And that was that. They pulled you out. Someone may have grabbed the mangled leg as an afterthought, but this was 1966, before the age of reattachments. My father knelt in the snow and wiped his knife blade clean. This was before there would be people on the road we could not help, before the next Christmas and the ones after that, when a crate of oranges would come from Baltimore with a card that said, "Best wishes from the leg and me," never specifying which leg you meant, the one you kept or the one you let go. What the mind keeps, it keeps. I still have my mother humming, "I thought about you." Still have my brothers punching each other in the way back. Still have my father still running with his Swiss army, as if he could, in some coming blizzard, save us all. Thank you.
What a fantastic reading. Thank you so very much. We are going to be signing books right in the back. Well, not me. They are. So if you all would let them make their way to the chairs in the back, they will then be happy to sign your books. Thank you.